Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life podcast. My guest on today's episode is Quincy Simpson. Quincy is the head boys basketball coach at Lima Senior High School. He's coaching in a place where his journey began, and it's quite a journey that led him away from Lima and back home to a place where he has an incredible passion for leading and shaping the young men in the community as a part of his basketball program. I hope you'll enjoy my conversation today with Lima Senior's Quincy Simpson on the Basketball and Life podcast. Quincy, thanks so much for sitting down with me today. I know we've been trying to work this out for a few weeks, and I appreciate you making time. I have said this about four or five podcasts that I've recorded here in the second run of this podcast is I feel like this one's overdue. When I started it in 2020, I had a list of about 18 names, and you were on the top of that list, but nobody said no. Right. Like everybody said yes during the pandemic. So then I had this idea, well, maybe I'll get outside of Northwest Ohio and draw in. So we were doing college coaches from different places. But when I decided to relaunch here this late summer, like this needs to happen. I mean, I'm a Northwest Ohio guy. This is Northwest Ohio. But this story that you've got, your story of getting from here back to here, right, and the full circle nature of things is going to resonate with a lot of people. So I don't want to sit in the way too much. I'm just going to let you go. My first question always is, talk about growing up, your childhood, and I guess two things. One, the role of basketball in your childhood, but secondly, and most importantly, when did you start thinking coaching was kind of maybe a thing you might want to do?
Yeah, man, I definitely appreciate you having me. You know, we've known each other for a while, obviously.
Yeah, before you go, like I was just thinking about it the other day. I think we met at my house. I think you came to my little farm in Northwest Ohio to play pickup ball with Brad.
Brad Leonard.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's got to be the 1980s.
I don't remember
maybe early 90s,
year, but I remember I was
seventh grader, maybe
going to ninth grade,
eighth or ninth grade.
And
yeah,
back then, we were still in middle school. Ninth grade, I was at West.
Yep.
Going, I was playing at West. I met Brad. You know, I spent a lot of time at his house, going to the movies, the little theater over in
Ada.
But yeah, man, I mean, Brad was always like family. You know, growing up. So we met years ago.
Long time
ago. It was
ago.
A good deal, definitely.
So tell me about growing up. Lima kid, basketball, where does it play in? How did it impact your life? And again, when did you start thinking maybe, coaching might be my thing?
Now, growing up was, for me and our family, was, you know, it was rough. It was definitely rough. Single parent. You know, my mom, you know, made wine out of water. You know, didn't have a lot, but we definitely had a lot of love in our home. You know, I was the youngest of three boys. My mom worked a ton of hours, Lima Convent Lesson Home. She worked double shifts. She picked up other part-time jobs. You know, I can remember there were times when she worked 24 hours. And me and my brothers felt like it was party time, not literally, but mom ain't here. We can kick back, put our feet up, watch cartoons all day, eat everything in the cabinets, but not realizing the sacrifice that she is really doing, you know, just to keep the lights on. You know, there were times that we had to have the oven on to heat the house. You know, I remember those days, you know what I mean? So it definitely was a rough upbringing, but it was a lot of love. You know, a tremendous amount of love in our household. I'm not sure where I would be right now if it wasn't for the Bradfield Center. You know, we grew up 400 blocks South College, and everybody in the neighborhood gravitated towards the Bradfield Center, you know, which right now it's a beautiful thing that Chris Jackson is now the director.
Absolutely.
Trying to get it back to what it used to be, and I'm sure he's going to do a tremendous job of doing so. But for us, that was home. That was home for everybody in the neighborhood. You went down there after school program, you boxed, you played basketball, you played video games, you got discipline down there from other adults. You know, you spent summers there for play school. Miss Monfort, she kept her foot on our necks. So yeah, man, it was just like in that era, you know, everybody that came through to Bradfield, if you grew up on the west side of Lima, you know, you was a product of the Bradfield Center. And, you know, honestly, it saved a lot of lives. You know, that's where we kind of learned, you know, how to become men, mm-hmm. you know. We seen it all down there, you know, and it was a blessing to be a part of that, because even though our home was filled with a lot of love, we didn't have a lot of other things, you know. There were Christmases where we didn't have anything, you know. So we really didn't understand, you know, finances and making, you know, instead of buying Christmas gifts, we got to pay rent. We have to pay bills, utilities. We didn't, as kids, you don't understand that.
Right.
But as we got older, man, it's like my mom did everything for us to make sure that me and my brothers are where we are today. So definitely a blessing growing up, you know, in terms of coaching, you know, I was able to be amongst some really tremendous men growing up. Danny Upshaw was my first basketball coach. Actually, my uncle Philip Simpson mm-hmm. was my first basketball coach. And we had a really good team. At Lowell, I was younger than Greg and those guys, but I played with those guys. And we had a phenomenal team, but we never could beat the Van Wert Killer Bees.
I remember the Killer Bees.
You know, what's crazy is that I remember that. Of course, he clouded those boys.
Yeah.
We never could beat the Van Wert Killer Bees, but I ended up going to Faroe when I was in the fifth grade, and Danny Upshaw was the first, you know, the first guy in terms of basketball that coached us and had us, like, literally at his house all the time. You know, even at that point, I didn't know I was going to be into coaching. I played midget league football for the Sharks. Milt Butler was mm-hmm. Milt was probably the first guy that disciplined us, and my mom was okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, we spent literally days over there in the summer. We practically lived there during football season. Every weekend, we was at Milt's house. And then when I got older in the high school, like, I was over at Milt Butler's house literally every weekend, you know. I actually lived with him for a little while, you know. At this time, I'm the youngest, so my oldest brother, Warren, is in the military. And then my middle brother, Sean, is at Nevada,
mm-hmm.
Reno, playing ball. So I'm the head case now. You know, so my mom would, you know, she would send me over Milt's house when I would get on her nerves, and, you know, Milt, you know, they were just open arms with anybody. But I watched him sacrifice. I watched him, you know, buy us stuff, man. Like, it was just, like, beautiful to see, you know, him pour into us and having his own family. Mm-hmm. You know, Jamar, you know, coming up, you know, we practically had Jamar and Jaren in the headlock coming up, you know. But yeah, man, I mean, Danny Upshaw, my Uncle Philip was the first. And then Danny really, like, had two hands on us. And then Milt had, like, two hands and 2 feet. And then it was my uncle, Radar,
mm-hmm.
you know. And so he took it to another level.
So you mentioned a couple of things there. One is growing up right in Lima with the names that you said you're talking about. To the average casual listener to this podcast that has familiarity with Lima, they're going to say, well damn, that's just basketball royalty.
Not for sure.
But the point is that when I relaunched this podcast this year, I went from Talking Hoops as the title of the podcast to Basketball and Life as the title of the podcast,
right.
Because to the average everyday person, it's like, oh, those are basketball legends. But
right. There
are also people living through a life with you
that isn't
the stuff legend is made of. It's
absolutely
not fairy tale. It's
absolutely
not. It's real.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned, you know, Radar. And, you know, when I was a college student, I was a student assistant at Ohio Northern.
Mm-hmm.
And they used Radar, and some guys used to come and play our JVs.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I remember realizing, like, I don't know who that guy is, but he can play. And
Radar.
A lot of guys can play that we don't always hear about. So you grow up in a, I hate to use the word culture because it's overused, but a basketball culture where everybody can play and everybody's playing a lot.
Mm-hmm.
When did it start to become something for you that might, like, be an avenue to bigger, better things? And it's not just something you do because everybody's playing.
Man, you know, honestly, you know, Radar had me under his wing when I was young. Like, I probably was at some of those Ohio Northern games. Mm-hmm. Like I did some time in JDC when I missed my whole junior year of basketball and most of the school year because I was in juvenile detention center. Mm-hmm. And so when I got out, Radar kind of like put me in a headlock and said, it ain't happening again. And man, he practically saved my life. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, sure.
Not practically, he did. You know, because I was left field. I was out there, and I didn't necessarily have a care. I didn't necessarily have any understanding on what I wanted. Mm-hmm. You know, so many people were expecting me to be similar to my brother Sean, or go to Avenue. My brother Warren going to the military.
So when Sean's growing up doing what he's doing, and he's ahead of you, and you're watching, and he ends up in Nevada. I think a lot of people around Lyman know that. Other people might not. Sean Pugsley was a very, very good player.
Yeah.
And got out of here.
Yeah.
But you know, Warren's right here.
Yeah.
And I am so blessed to call Warren a friend, like I think a lot of people are. That's still for a young guy like you, maybe I'm crazy. That's a lot to put on a young guy like you're not Sean,
yeah.
And you're not Warren. Is it hard to figure out who the hell Quincy even is when you're struggling through that stuff?
Absolutely, because, for example, and on our block, like we lived here, our front doors faced Greg, or my cousin, mm-hmm. Greg Simpson. Mm-hmm. And so you had Todd, and then you had Greg, who were the same ages as Warren and Sean. Next door to Greg was my cousin, Mark Simpson. You had Mark and Terry, same age as Warren and Sean. So I was the loner.
Yeah.
I was the one that didn't have a cousin, you know, my age that, you know, and obviously I played a lot with Sean, Greg, Terry, but I still was the little brother. I was the one that at times they stiff arm me, you know, get on out of here. I had to figure things out on my own. And then, you know, I was like growing up, I was kind of envious of my brother Sean. He had all the good grades. Everybody liked him. Very, very popular. And he was really good in sports, mm-hmm. you know, football and basketball. Well, as he got older, he kind of let football go. But instead of gravitating towards that and being a sponge and sucking some of that up, I was envious of that, jealous of that, upset because it wasn't me. You know, my brother Sean used to get up in the summers. I mean, this is like 10th grade, 8 o'clock in the morning, and go to the Bradfield and just spend 2 or 3 hours there by himself outside, and would play one on one, full court by himself. And I had no idea. You know what I'm saying? Like I had no awareness of what that was doing for him. You know, and I stayed at home. Watch cartoons, you know, and I'm talking summer, you know, didn't want to go. And he ends up playing Division I. And I'm just a guy here that's just decent in basketball, but I'm just playing basketball because it's what we've always done,
mm-hmm.
you know. But Sean really, really worked hard and got everything that he deserved to get. And so, kind of to answer your question, when I kind of learned that, hey, I could really probably do something with this, was my man Joe Hutchins, you know, who's my assistant now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's crazy because a lot of white guys wasn't welcome at the Bradfield when we were coming up. And so me and Joe met when I went to West. I started at South, mm-hmm. and then I got kicked out of South. I could not stay out of trouble.
Yeah.
You know, goofy stuff.
Right.
You know, and I got kicked out. And I remember Miss Gurley, who was the principal, I remember her saying, you know, I know your family. I know the Pugsleys, but you can't come here no more. You can't come back to this school no more. And it was crazy because I went to West. That's where my brother Sean was already at.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played 8th grade, 9th grade, and me and Joe Hutchins was in the backcourt at West. And so we kind of developed a relationship. Sophomore, junior, we graduated together. But throughout that time, we became like basketball best friends. So anytime a ball was bouncing, I'm calling Joe. He called me, and I started taking him to the Brad Field. And so Joe would be going, you know, playing ball at the YMCA. But we didn't, we couldn't afford a membership there.
Right.
You know, if I didn't sneak through the back steps at the old Y, I wasn't getting in. You know, everybody remember those days. So I started bringing Joe to the Y. And I started bringing Joe to the Bradfield. And guys down there embraced him, you know, and Joe got better fast. And he grew and got better fast. So fast forward, there's a school, Bacon College in Oklahoma. And they want Joe pretty bad. And Joe put his neck on the line for me and was basically saying, you know, if my guy, if you can't give him a scholarship, I'm out. And so, you know, the coaches took a chance on me. No film, no social media, basically just having a conversation with me over the phone, talking to Joe, talking to Radar, and offer me a scholarship. And me and Joe go out to Muskogee, Oklahoma. You know, what a tremendous school. Indian school. We go there, play well. We didn't like the school at all. But go there, play well, and then we both leave. And I end up going to a JUCO in Texas, right? And I was a third team All-American, JUCO All-American. We both played very well at Bacon College, but we just knew, like, I don't want to spend 2 years here. So I'm the true definition of portal, NCAA portal. I was a portal kid, you know. I bounced around a lot. So I go to Kilgore in Texas, and man, had a lovely time out there. Played well, All-American, everything's going well. Got a ton of Division I, you know, offers. Actually signed to play D1 at Northeast Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Northeast Louisiana. Yep. And they had this thing called an exit exam in the state of Texas. And what that was is basically like a collegiate level ACT. If you don't pass the exit exam, you can't go Division I, right? So my coach is taking me like several different places in Texas every Saturday. I can't pass his test. I'm close, but it's not happening. So Northeast Louisiana sends me to a school the next fall called Bossier Parish Community College in Shreveport, Louisiana. I'm there specifically just to take some courses, finish my associates. So it's going to come from Louisiana, instead not Texas. Texas. And then I'm going to slide right in the winter, in the January semester. Well, the coaching staff get fired. So now I'm at this JUCO in Louisiana, not playing. I didn't already use my 2 years.
Right.
Not knowing what I'm finna do. Well, at the time, my brother Sean in Nevada, he's miserable in Nevada. He had 3 years, three different head coaches.
I remember that.
He's on his last year. School in Oklahoma reaches out to me, Central Oklahoma. They reach out to me. I tell them, I'll go, but you got to take my brother, you know, my brother Sean. So they do their homework on my brother immediately. Yeah, you know, coming from a D1, zone buster, can play. So now me and Sean, we're at Central Oklahoma playing great. I hurt my back in the fall. I'm not able to play. I actually got to come home. Rehab. I didn't even think I was going to play collegiate ball anymore. But my brother Sean played there, and it's crazy because he still lives in Oklahoma City.
I thought that was the case.
Yeah, he still lives out there. That school was in Edmond, Oklahoma, which is a suburb of Oklahoma City. Sean had a tremendous year out there, you know, fabulous year out there. But I hurt my back bad, so I had to come home. Didn't think I was going to play. I'm back home, Radar pushing me, trying to get me together. I'm getting myself together. And then we go to Kansas City. You ever heard of a guy named Jerry Mullins?
Yeah.
Been around for sure. Ever.
Yeah.
We go to one of his camps in Kansas City. And I'm feeling better. I play well. Meet a guy named Ed Pipes. He's from Ohio, Cincinnati. that's the head coach at a D2 school in Colorado. And talking to this guy, and I'm just talking to him thinking like, man, his story is like similar to mine's. You know, we got like, he's from Cincinnati, got in trouble at a young age, blah, 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 turned it around, got a chance to get into coaching. Now he's the head coach at a D2. He wants me. Hey, if you want me, you got to take my man, Joe Hutchins. that's kind of how it's going.
Right.
Wasn't really interested in Joe, but comes to Lima. And we had a summer league here. And at this time, we had the old Lima Senior, playing in the summer league. And your boy, head coach of Spencerville,
Kevin,
Sensiball, is killing us. He cannot miss. You know, I'll tell him like, that guy, when he was still in college, still.
He's a video game.
Oh, yeah. He ain't missing. He's not missing if he's open. But I remember we were playing them, and I was playing well, but Joe was playing well. He was able to lay some eyes on Joe, gave Joe an offer. So now me and my man Joe, we back locked in together, and we in Colorado. And it's going great, man. And so, you know, me and him been, you know, we played our last 2 years together. We spent 3 years out there. The first year we wasn't able to play. But the last 2 years, we was able to play and had a lot of fun, man. So Joe is definitely a brother from a different mom, for sure.
So the first question that jumps to mind for me is, you're a Lima kid. You grow up in Lima. You play at Lima Senior. And then you start this odyssey. How many times during that experience did you have to fight off the, hell, I'm just going to go home and figure stuff out. This is too much. I'm bouncing off. I'm just going to go home and then I'll figure it out. And then was there a pull or was it, no, I'm out here. I got to get it done before.
Yeah.
I mean, where were you mentally? That had to be unbelievably challenging mentally.
You know, early on when me and Joe were at Bay Cone, it was so boring there. When I say so boring, it's indescribable. We would be sitting around like me and you are now on a Thursday. We'd be looking at the clock. It may be 2 o'clock. We'd be like, man, we should probably just go home for the weekend. Joe had a little Mustang. You know, gas at that time was like $1.10 a gallon. And we'd be like, hey, we left at 2 o'clock now. We get in the Lima at 2 o'clock because it's 12 hours. And we'd get in the car and just go. And we would stay home till like Monday, missing class, not realizing, you know.
Yeah.
But then when I went to Texas, and I was in East Texas in Kilgore, and I didn't have a car. So the coaches flew us down. And I remember getting off the plane at the airport in Dallas, first time I had experienced that Texas weather. Walking outside that airport, and it was like, what in the world? It cannot be this hot. And but I mean, I think what helped me maneuver through that situation was the campus for junior college. It was huge. And we had, you know, we had football, we had every sport. And so met a lot of people. It was fun. Right away, everything kind of seemed to click. And I never thought about going home. You know, I don't know if you remember Rodney Tiles.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, me and Rod went to Kilgore together.
Okay.
And so that was just so fun there. It was like real live college.
It was
life.
Your college experience. Yeah,
it was. And so, you know, we knew we wasn't going home except for 2 weeks over Christmas break. Everybody went home. And then when the season was over, you could go home during spring break and then in the summer. But I think for me, which you don't see a lot of kids going too far nowadays because, you know, most coaches don't recruit outside their region unless you're really talented. Mm-hmm. But you know, back then, you know, it was nothing to go far. You know, my brother went to Nevada. Mm-hmm. You know, it was nothing for us to go far. So I felt like it was okay. But I also knew where I had come from and some of the stuff that would pull me back into some of that lifestyle that I was doing at a younger age. And I didn't want that for myself, you know. So being far was probably a blessing for me.
We got about 5 minutes before we got to take a break, so I'll ask what I think is a fairly simple question, but it might have layers to it. So you've gone through all these stops and all the experiences. Mm-hmm. Were you able at that point to start reflecting on, hey, my high school coach did it this way, and this guy does it this way, and this guy does it this way, and start maybe thinking about basketball from the standpoint of there's a lot of ways to do this and be successful, and start building a philosophy for yourself. Because one of the things that stands out to me about you is that journey, that route, your coaching style and your coaching effectiveness is reflective of a guy who played 4 years at a high school, 4 years at a college, and had a very good pedigree in coaching. You pulled together a lot of experiences to create what I think is a very atypical way of coaching the game of basketball, just based on your route to get here. Right. That was an odd question, but did you start pulling things from different guys and feeling like maybe you were putting together an idea of how you wanted to do things?
You know, not really. Not at that time. What I was doing, I was coaching the game how I had been coached from Milt Butler. He was a hard coach, like hard nose. And then Radar was the guy that wasn't hard, put your arm around you, tell you what he wanted, but Radar took us all over the country. So I was able to see a coach that, you know, all of them that cared, but a coach that was hard, but then a coach that wasn't hard, but showed you the love, you know, and I'm showing you the love by taking you all over the country. And then as I got older, I think for me, once I moved back home, you know, I started to see coaching with Gaffney and I jumping into AAU, networking with different people. I started to see like, hey, I may have an opportunity to take this coaching thing serious. Mm-hmm. And I, throughout my journey in college, my thought process was the NBA. I'm going to the league. And it was never, I'm getting into coaching. But God has a different way for everybody. And I'm blessed to be in a position that I am right now.
Well, let's go ahead and take the break a little bit early, because I want to get into that. Your playing days are behind you. You're back home. And I don't know what the proverb is, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with one step, but you, whatever your first step was, we'll get into whether or not you thought it might end up being this 1,000 miles that it's been for you. I just want to take a quick second and interrupt the podcast for a minute to remind you that our new platform for the podcast is Spotify for Podcasters. And if you're listening on Spotify, you have an opportunity to make a donation to the podcast if you would be inclined to do so. Thanks for considering any sort of donation. One-time, monthly, or other regular donations are certainly welcome. Spotify for Podcasters is our platform, and they're providing an easy option for you to do so just by clicking the link at the end of the episode. Thanks for your consideration, and now back to the podcast. All right, so we could probably spend an entire hour-plus podcast on just your playing journey. But when it's over, when it's finished, and you're coming back to Lima, you're coming back home, and you got to build a plan for a life and a career.
Absolutely.
And what's your mindset in terms of what you want to do, and then what opportunities were there for you?
You know, when I moved back home, which was something that I didn't want to do, but I knew I didn't want to be an over the phone father. I didn't want to be the dude that lives so far away, but I'm calling my kids every day. I just didn't, you know what I mean? And so I just made it a point to, if I'm gonna come back home, I'm gonna try to get involved with the youth, with the community, and just try to, you know, just try to make a difference in any way I can. So I end up coming back home. And what's crazy is this journey started with me coaching football. A lot of people don't know that.
I love that.
You know, I was coaching with the Panthers, football. Did that for a lot, you know, that right there is when I knew I wanted to coach, you know, with the Panthers, some tremendous, all my brothers out there, Shane, Sean, Chad, Dale, you know, Julius Smith, all those guys were a big impact, you know, were really impactful on my life in terms of just me, who I am as a person, and the coaching aspect. We started the Panthers first, and then I took a group of young kids, X, in that group where they were probably 8, 9 years old, and we just started playing basketball. So then we just had a little team called the Team Lima Panthers.
Mm-hmm.
The Panthers came because they all played football.
Yeah.
You know, Jay Thomas, you know, Marcravis Wilson, X, Elijah. But I remember meeting Coach Gaffney, and he said he had a position open at West. the hair crawling off my body. I'm thinking West. So the first thing I'm thinking is, man, I can really be a coach in the West South game. That's as far as it's going.
Right.
So I go to the old lineman senior and meet with Gaff, and he like, yeah, I got a position over at West, but I also got a freshman position. And after talking to you, I really want you up here with me. And I'm hurt. Like, man, I'm only coaching this West and South game, man. You know, yeah. I don't think you realize how big that is, you know. So I end up coaching freshmen. And, man, I'm so glad I did that. And just to watch him, you know, how organized he was and how structured he was and how disciplined he was with his players. I learned so much. You know, and then he ended up leaving. I did 5 years with him. And then I did two with Sean Allen. Mm-hmm. But I learned a lot from Gaffney. I mean, he was a straight black and white guy, no gray area.
Well, an interesting thing about Mark Gaffney is, for the people that don't know, Mark was a coach at Lima Senior, but the Lima Senior head basketball coaching position has been filled by legitimate personalities. Mm-hmm. Paul Whitney was a bigger than life personality. Right. Matt Creamer, big personality. I mean, everybody that's filled that spot. Dick Heath, big personality. Mm-hmm. Mark was a guy who I think was just a roll up your sleeves basketball junkie kind of guy. Yeah. He didn't really promote himself. He just kind of grinded away at the coaching thing, and he did it in an unconventional way. He was a guy that would play triangle and two or diamond and one or maybe both in the same possession. I mean, so when you talk about what you learned from Gaff, you mentioned the organizational part. Anything else that stands out about what you kind of took away from your time with Mark that you thought that's useful and valuable for me?
Gym rat. You know, I watched him be a gym rat with his players. I watched him have Travis in the gym, Walton, early. Hold on, before school, some days before practice, I watched him have Keith Jackson doing pre-practice before practice. That's where I got pre-practice from, skill development, you know. And I say, okay, this is part of it. This isn't his assistants or some managers doing it. This is him inside these lines, rebounding, going over drills, going over skill work individually. I started to see that, and I just gravitated towards it, and then. When he left, you know, I thought I was going to get the job then. I felt I was ready. Mm-hmm. I had kind of developed myself as a guy around here that was involved with the community coaching. And at this time, I'm coaching AAU. I'm heavy involved in that, pretty much making my brand of who I am known. But I didn't get it, you know, and I didn't hang my chin. I didn't blame. I didn't do any of that. I just continued to build my brand. I continued to build my network. I continued to coach at a higher level in terms of AAU. I went out to Rhodes. I coached there 1 year. We did really, really well. And then I did the Lima Explosion for 1 year. We did well. But I felt those opportunities kind of prepared me for where I am today.
So, and I could... God, we could do four podcasts because I could get into it, again, to the outside person. They say, "Well, Rhodes State, like it did, the program didn't even operate, so that wasn't valuable." And, right. And the Lima Explosion, that was really short lived, and that wasn't valuable. But I have talked to a number of guys in the coaching profession, ladies too, who talk about those in between time experiences. Mm-hmm. A good friend of mine is now out of high school coaching, but he was at Versailles High School and he was at Arcanum High School, and he won a girls' state title at Jackson Center. But he said maybe the most valuable coaching experience he ever had was a year or two that he coached Wright State Lake.
Yeah, we played that.
Because he said, Roger said, I got to do whatever the hell I wanted to. And if it blew up, nobody cared.
Right, right.
And if it worked well, I just filed it away. Yeah. And he said it was the best thing he ever did. So when you talk about the Lima Explosion, somebody's going to say, yeah, the Lima Explosion. That was valuable. That was good for you.
That was wonderful for me because I was able to coach Jamar Butler for a year, you know, and this is after he had the success he had at, you know, Ohio State. Mm-hmm. I learned a lot. He helped me. You know, I learned a lot from him. He allowed me to coach him hard. We had a phenomenal year. You're dealing with grown men and you're dealing with men who want to be paid. We don't need to get into that part, but I just couldn't continue to do it, you know, for free.
Right.
But we had, you know, we had a tremendous year, you know, coaching at OSU Lima. My whole thought process in that was like, hey, there's enough guys around Lima.
I've always felt
that
way.
That's not playing. So let me go try to get those guys, number one, get them in school, give them an opportunity to get in school, and then give them an opportunity to hoop. And we was 21-11, 1 year. Lost in the conference championship to Miami Middletown.
Yeah.
But a phenomenal group of guys, most of them from Lima. And if I could go back and do it all over again, I probably would have stayed. You know, and so I didn't do when I – after I was done with the Lima Explosion, I was just the AAU guy, you know, working at the prison at this time.
Yeah.
But I'm the AAU guy. And then, you know, Drew Joyce, LeBron's guy,
mm-hmm.
calls me one day out the blue and says, Nike is putting the pressure on me because this program wasn't doing the best, the King James program. He said, I got to get a coach to get my program intact, or I'm gonna be removed from Nike. And I don't know you, but everybody that I talk to, they say, hey, you gotta go to Lima and get that dude with the beard. That's exactly what he said. And so I'm on the phone in awe, because I know I'm talking to Drew Joyce, like, I know who this is,
mm-hmm.
you know? And he said, I'm gonna drive to Lima and meet with you such and such date and time. And I hang up and I'm thinking, yeah, whatever. Well, the day comes and I forgot. He calls me like, I'm here. We meet at the fire department, me, him, and my brother Warren. And he, just him coming here when I know he didn't have to. His integrity as a man. And there were some other programs that have been reaching out to me at this time.
Mm-hmm.
This is when X is going into the ninth grade. So this is after his eighth grade year. So he, when we left, it was a no-brainer. This guy came here. We had a great conversation. His integrity speaks volumes to me. He's given me an opportunity to coach AAU nationally. And from then, I knew then I'm gonna take this opportunity. I'm gonna sprint with it. We put a good group of guys together, and when I say we crashed the country, we crashed the country, a ton of courts. Number one team at 15U, top five team at 16U, top 10 team at 17U. A few guys from Lima, you know, Dantez Walton, Trey Cobb, X,
yeah,
you know, Rico Stafford. And so that right there, I think, gave me an opportunity for Lima Senior to say, you know what, let's give him a chance.
It's interesting because I make this argument to people all the time. They say, well, is that guy ready? Look, yeah. Hell, being ready to be a head coach means that, number one, you don't want to be an assistant anymore. Number two, you got an idea of what you want to run offensively and how you want to play yeah. defensively. If you have those three things, you're ready to be a head coach. Then there's being prepared
for sure.
to be a head coach, totally different sure. level. And then once you are ready and prepared – to get a break in this business at the size of school you're talking about, you also have to have some credibility.
Got to.
And it's very unconventional, but I also felt like very necessary in your case that your credibility came through, hey, if the people around the country are going to let me coach their guys and go play nationally,
absolutely.
I'm probably okay to coach your kids here in Lima.
Yeah, that's true. And so I think, you know, my thought process was basically what you just referred to, you know.
And you were ready when Gaffney left, but you might not have been prepared.
I was ready, but I might not have been prepared. And I believe everything happens for a reason.
But OSU Lima yeah. explosion, that's all preparation that puts you in a place that
yeah.
it couldn't be debated at that point.
That all definitely helped me prepare. Even when I got the job at Lima Senior, what I was coming in with was relationships.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a part that a lot of coaches miss out on. If you have the relationship with your players, they'll jump off a bridge for you. They won't ask no questions because they trust you. And I had that coming in, getting the job at Lima Senior. But again, I still didn't know. Like, I didn't understand scouting, the hours that it really takes, you know, me and my son worked out a lot, you know, but I didn't really understand you're not just coaching one team. You're in charge of a program, middle school on up, you know. And we fast forward to the first game, and my first game at Wall Park, and we lose. You know,
I remember that
we lose, and I had to suspend a couple guys, my son included. But I had to make sure guys knew that you were going to be students first and athletes second in that order. And there was going to be a certain standard and expectation within this program that hadn't been there. And if you step outside the standard, if you step outside the expectations, there will be consequences. So I had to suspend three players first game, my son included. We lose to Wall Park. And man, you know how the Lima community can be. So the second game, we play Toledo St. John's, who's, at that time, powerhouse. Now, we're up 7 with the ball with 2 minutes left. We lose. I'm 0-2. The very next night, we're playing Salina. We're down 4 with 1.5 minutes left. And now I'm looking at the scoreboard. I'm looking in the crowd. What have I gotten myself into? We end up winning that game. But I was like, wow, if I would have started 0-3, I might not be here now, you know.
Yeah.
But from then on, it was like, okay, we're going to put this thing together, and we're going to make Lima Senior a household name in the state of Ohio. And I think we've done a good job of doing so.
So this might sound like a simple-minded question. If it is, hell, I'm from Alger, so I'll be simple-minded. But when you do what you do on your, you use the term grind a lot, when you get on that grind and it's season and it's spring and it's summer and the AAU was before you, mm-hmm. you were running your own, because my belief is that your evolution as a coach from year one, what you just described, the 0-2, almost 0-3 start to today, mm-hmm. to the untrained eye, it's like, hey, he's just a coach and he's got 10. Leaps and bounds.
Right.
You've grown as a tactician and as a leader and just in every way that you can grow. But my question is, when you're on that grind, Ron, when the hell do you have time to study your craft? I mean, you're always at a gym. You're always, when do you have time to just evaluate you and study and apply and make the changes or the adjustments or the philosophical things that, because like I said, you do it different than I think a lot of people would believe that you do unless mm-hmm. they sit down and watch.
No, that's a good question. You know, I think self-evaluation has to be a lot within coaches. And so I'm always self-evaluating me on ways and avenues that I can improve relationships, improve my X and O game, improve me as a person. Because like I tell my players, if you guys get better as individuals, then we'll get better as a team. So if I can be a better coach today, I think that'll put those guys in a better situation to win tomorrow. But basketball is just what it is. I don't necessarily have a lot of time when I'm at home for nothing else. I watch Martin a lot, but outside of that, I'm watching some sort of basketball, whether it's, you know, old games at Lima Senior. I've never watched the state championship game, never will. But there's you know, other teams. I watch a lot of what – now I'm watching a lot of what Centerville does and Brooke Cups. They do some good things. And I'm always a guy that wants to learn. I still go to coaching clinics every year because I don't feel like I know it all. If a guy is doing something right, I'm on the phone asking questions because I don't think you can get stagnant in this business. And the time that you feel like you know it all, that's probably when it's going to come crumbling down. So I just want to continue to grow as a person and grow as a coach.
So let me ask you a question. I'm just really curious about this because it's something that I guess I've lacked understanding from this perspective. When you are in that heady space of Drew Joyce is coming to see me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been asked to coach national teams that are making national noise. And I'm running a high school program of my own at my alma mater. How do you stay humble and focused on, I just got to keep getting better? That's not natural either.
Yeah, that's true. I think part of that is how I was raised. You know, I think that's the people that I've had that built the wall around me when I was younger. You know, I got in trouble early.
Yeah.
You know, and I had a group of people that kept me grounded to make sure that that wouldn't happen again. You know, my mom, Radar, my dad. So, you know, my brother Warren, Chris Jackson, you know, I had a good group of people around me just to keep me humble. You know, I pinch myself all the time knowing that I'm the head coach at Lima Senior. You know, and people ask me a lot, you know, how long am I going to stay? I obviously had opportunities to go coach at other places.
Sure.
But why? I think I'm in heaven. You know, I think I'm doing God's work here. It's bigger than basketball. And that's what people don't understand. When you're dealing with a head coaching job at Lima Senior, when you're dealing with that, it's bigger than the sport. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
I'm here trying to help build character and save lives and keep guys having some success after Lima Senior.
So when you get to the pinnacle at Lima Senior, you are in the state final four. You're in the state finals. Mm-hmm. And that's with your son playing for you. And he goes on to the things that he's gone on to. I think it speaks to me that if you're not going to leave Lima after that happens, right, anything ever getting you out of here?
You know, it'd be hard. You know, it would be hard. And I've had an opportunity to go coach at some high major Division I schools.
Right.
But it would be hard because I really do love the kids. You know, I love waking up, going to work every day. I love who I work for. I love our superintendent. I love our principals, our staff, our students. It's not a job for me at all. And so when you look at it that way, when I worked at the prison, that was a job. You know, yeah, that was, I'm going to work, decent money, getting overtime, but
right,
I knew that's not what I wanted to do for 30 years.
Sure.
So when I had an opportunity to do this and leave that atmosphere, man, I took it and ran with it.
So I'm going to ask you, I got just a couple more questions that they may have long answers, but the first question I want to ask before we get to the finish, and I just picked something up earlier in another podcast episode that I think I'm going to apply to everyone that I do. It's four okay questions that I want to ask you. But the first question I want to ask is unrelated to those, is just your opinion. Does your AAU experience impact and help shape you as the leader of a high school program more than your leadership of a program help shape what you do as an AAU coach? How do those two things impact one another in terms of you know, positive things that you can apply from one to the other? Because it really is two different worlds, even though it's the same game.
Very much two different worlds. But it's a great question because at first I was the AAU guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was the guy that coached Lima Senior, but he was LeBron's guy, ran LeBron's program. He was the King James AAU coach. Now it's reversed.
Right.
So when we go travel places, that's the guy that coaches Lima. It's no longer the AAU guy. That's the guy that coaches. He's from Lima.
Sure.
And I'm making my point on everything that I post. I'm always making it known to use the term, the word, the place, Lima. Because we don't, you know, our kids here don't get the same opportunities as Columbus, Cleveland, Cincinnati, you know, so I'm always carrying that word, that Lima, on me wherever I go. And so now, like, we go across the country and people know Lima, Ohio because of me. And so that, to me, that's more of a blessing than me going somewhere and saying, oh, that's an AAU, you know, Nike coach. I want to be known as a guy coming right here from Lima, Ohio.
All right, Coach. So I said I've got four questions for you. I'm going to, I guess, be direct with you.
Okay.
Four questions that came from an earlier podcast episode I recorded with Bob Galone from Grandview Heights, and he got them from a guy named Joe Ehrman, who wrote a book called, I think he said it was Inside Out Coaching, is the book that these four questions were in. First question is, why do you coach?
Oh, that's easy. I coach for the love of helping kids. You know, like I said earlier, it started off with coaching football. And I knew at that early age, when my oldest son was 9, and being a part of that staff, I knew it was something that I wanted to do. Didn't know it was going to turn into basketball. I'm glad it did. But I coached specifically for, you know, loving on these kids.
Second question. Why do you coach the way that you coach?
Oh, I'm a hard coach. I'm a tough coach.
I love it.
I'm very direct. I don't know if my style will work anywhere. But I believe it helps where I'm coaching at with Lima Senior. Because these kids, you have to prepare them for life past high school. There's going to be somewhere in life where it's going to be a struggle. And there will be no quit. There's going to be some adversity moments in life. There's going to be no give up. We always talk about not quitting. If you start quitting at a young age in things, especially sports, you go up, you get a job, you don't like what your supervisor is telling you to do, you quit. You have some struggles in your marriage, you quit. And so I coach them hard. So when they leave me, nothing that they experience, they can say, I wasn't prepared for this. And I think that's what you get when you're dealing with me.
So then naturally the third question is, if a player were to answer this for me, what would the answer be to what's it like to be coached by you?
Tough inside the lines. I'm definitely a very, very immature guy outside the lines. Pranks, jokes, laughter, you know, having fun. And my players gravitate towards that. They know once we hit that gym, it's all business. Once we leave that gym, you know, the gloves are off. We have a real good relationship. And I think that's what keeps me younger. I think that's what keeps my relationship with my players, former players. I think that's what keeps it tight.
So, and I guess the fourth question is a pretty big question. I mean, there's a lot of ways to, I guess, answer the question, but I think it really is a very personal thing, is what is your definition of success?
You know, I think there's a lot of levels to having some success. But for me, seeing our kids, seeing my players grow up and be productive adults, that's success for me. Having a job, being able to take care of themselves, creating families, creating opportunity for themselves. That's success for me. I never do this thing expecting guys to be pros. Everyone can't play basketball at the collegiate level, but being able to maintain a job, being able to carry your own weight in life, that's a recipe for success for me. It's pretty simple.
So when you, I vaguely remember, and I think I have it accurate, that when you got the job at Lima Senior, one of the first things that kind of popped up everywhere, and it wasn't an original thought with you, but it became recognizable. There was a Spartan head and the word family everywhere.
Absolutely.
I knew, you know, obviously you made it a goal. It was a priority. What, are you in year 9?
I'm going into year 10.
Okay, so you finished. Year 10's getting ready to start.
Yes.
Has that thing completely arrived? Is that something that'll never completely arrive? How have you done with your concept of Spartan family?
You know, I think it arrived years ago. We want to run this program as a family because that's who we are. When you spend as many hours in the gym as we do, it has to be a family. I should have got that patent because now you just see it everywhere. I don't think people were even using it before I started selling that pitch and saying it a lot, you know, but for me, the family, I broke that down. Forget about me, I love you, the F-A-M-I-L-Y. That's just saying, like, man, I don't have a problem giving you the shirt off my back, but just make sure if I need your shirt, you give me yours too. You know, I tell my players, I'll scratch your back, you have to scratch mine. You scratch mine in the classroom, I'll scratch yours on the court. And as long as you can do what you're supposed to do inside the classroom, life will be much easier in basketball and in terms when you are able to leave Lima Senior. So, you know, within the dynamics of a family, you have some trials and tribulations. You have some earthquakes. You go through some things, but it's a family. And so you're able to hug you're able to dab hands, you're able to go through those fires, because at the end, the grass is green, the sky is blue, and so that's how we approach it.
The podcast is basketball and life, and so I can't completely get the whole podcast done without connecting your life and the podcast. You have raised Xavier as a high school student who began his career at Lima Central Catholic, mm-hmm. plays for you to finish his career, goes on to the University of Michigan, and has, by every definition, a remarkable career, yeah. and is continuing to grind away at his love to get to the professional level. What is the challenge or the biggest hurdle in fostering that kind of growth and still helping him realize that one day this thing's going to quit bouncing?
Yeah.
And the other parts of what we try to teach in our program are as important, even though they're not, you aren't going to use them to pay the bills today.
Right. Well, for him, you know, for X, I think he's going to be a coach. It's crazy as it sounds, I learned from him, you know, seeing his commitment to the game, seeing how dedicated he was, you know, having tons of talks with John Beilein about him, his growth as a person, his growth on the floor, having a lot of conversations with Juwan Howard. They all believe he's going to have a real good career in coaching. He just has that persona about him. He's very direct. He's very upfront. He's very personable. And so I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot from him. I look up to him, even though that's my son. Mm-hmm. You know, all my kids, you know, are doing tremendous. But, you know, for X, to see him not give up, you know, to see him sign a one-year deal with the Pistons, and is no big deal to him. Very, very humble. I'm extremely proud. Me and his mom done a tremendous job of raising him, along with our other two sons. You know, my daughter is doing extremely well here. You know, I don't really know how to directly answer the question, but as a father who's got a son that's there at the professional level, then I got a son that's going to be a freshman that he's getting it hard for me right now. I got some nephews. My nephew Lamar has two sons in Columbus that are phenomenal. Just a basketball family, you know, just a sports family. My cousin, you know, Jared Pugsley, mm-hmm. played with the Chiefs.
Yep.
So, man, like, our family has been beyond blessed. You know, I couldn't ask for a better chapter to write in my book. We are blessed. And, you know, even though I had to go through some adversity moments in my own life, and I had to go through a lot of what I call hells, I believe you got to go through hell to come out right. And so now I'm at a point in my life where I'm thankful for the people, you know, that I'm around, the people that I've had in my life. I'm thankful for the opportunity that Lima Senior has given me to be impactful and be able to lead a group of boys. And not only just them, just students in general. It just doesn't stop. I don't want it to.
Well, I appreciate your time. A big part of this podcast is you ask people sometimes to be transparent. And you have been.
Absolutely.
About some things that aren't easy. So I appreciate it. Your season isn't that far away, but maybe when the season gets over, maybe we do a pod and you tell me some of those Beilein stories.
Oh, yeah.
I'd really love to dive into talking with you about the King James stuff, the C2K stuff,
yeah.
and how your AAU thing has progressed. Now you're with All Ohio.
Yes.
And that whole story, I think it would be an interesting story to hear. We can do that another day, but
absolutely.
I know I told you I'd try to keep it to an hour, and we're right at that. So I appreciate your time more than you know.
I appreciate you.
My man, we'll stay in touch and I'll get over to practice here when we get things rolling, hopefully.
Anytime.
All right, brother, take care.
Appreciate you.
Hi, I'm Coach John Cook, and this is the Basketball and Life Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in and checking this one out. If you're listening on Spotify, courtesy of our platform, Spotify for Podcasters, you have the opportunity to make a donation to the podcast. If you would be inclined to do so, there's a link at the bottom of the episode that will allow you to make your donation in whatever amount you would choose to do so. If you're listening on any other platform, I just ask that you please rate, review, and subscribe, and come back anytime to check out more episodes here on the Basketball and Life podcast.